irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Carulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Wake up, Hollywood. How are you all tonight? My name is Nikki Carulla with special co-host Josh Ledoux. Say hello.
Hello, hello.
Oh, our studio audience loves you. I love you already. That's a warm welcome, see?
Perfect.
They snuck up on you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Of course, of course. You were a little nervous, but it's okay.
I like
the pre-show jitters.
I'm still a little nervous, but it's all good.
It's all the espresso and cocaina that's in your system right now.
Just espresso.
So how was your week, man? What did you do?
Oh, it's been busy, very busy.
You're in school and working, right?
This is true. Definitely in school, trying to get my CCNA, which has to do with networking.
Nice. That sounds very exciting. I'm just kidding. Well, you're bettering yourself.
God damn it!
That's a classic. That's see? Good. You're getting the hang of it already.
It's easy.
You're putting Eddie out of a job.
Very easy.
So you've been doing a lot of classes. And
lots of classes, but I still have time for TV when I come home.
What have you been watching?
That's a good question. OJ?
Dude, I'm obsessed with that
it's
show.
So good.
You know it's tonight.
Oh,
it's tonight.
Well, you know, who wants to watch commercials anyway?
Well, you know what? That's true. That's true. I'm addicted because I lived through it in L.A.
Yeah.
But you must love it, too, for the same reasons, but you lived in Boston, so.
Yeah, but I don't remember it this well. Like, of course, I remember the glove. I remember, you know, the big portions of it. I remember the chase. Everyone remembers that. But I don't remember all the little details, like, you know, all the blood mixture in the blazer, well, all the Bronco, I mean.
Yeah, all the evidence against OJ.
Yeah.
It's like, it's crazy that he was not, in, you know, put behind bars after all that.
Totally.
And I like the dynamics. The thing that I've been, like, really in love with that show, it's like, you see all the inner dynamics between the lawyers and even OJ, all these, like, little things that you're like, oh, my God.
Totally.
I didn't see that coming. That was just insane.
I didn't have this, like, my expectations for it were very low. And so when I first saw it, I was pretty into it. Like,
but the cast is awesome.
Totally. And John Travolta. I don't really like John Travolta. And I actually think he's decent in his.
Cuba Gooding Jr. is like killing it.
Very good.
I mean, it's like, it's insane. But I think everybody has their own like place in the show.
Yeah.
And it's just like moving. I'm like so bummed. It's almost over, right?
Know,
it's like three more episodes or something like that.
Yeah. And I find myself, it's funny because it's like you watch it and you're like, oh my God, OJ's. I hope this is not a spoiler alert. Everyone knows the OJ case.
They're going to be like, guilty at the end. What?
But I watch it, and I'm like, oh, my God, he's so guilty. He needs to go to jail. But also, at the same time, you're like, Johnny Cochran is so good. Like,
he's
you want
so
him
good.
To win. You
yeah.
want Cochran
yeah,
to win.
Yeah, because you're like, dude, you're a badass. You're a badass lawyer. And, like, the way he taunts everybody, even the way he, like kind of took the leadership position away from Robert Shapiro. See, all those dynamics, I did not remember really acknowledge if it was even happening, you know, the way it was.
Yeah. I agree.
And, you know, like the reliving of the Bronco scene. Dude, that was like an adrenaline rush, like seeing all of that.
Yeah.
You know, like everything about that show to me is just like, it's awesome.
So good.
What I've heard is they're going to do a series of all the biggest crime stories every year. So this is the first one.
Gotcha.
I don't know what they're doing for the next one, but I'm sure it'll be another either a huge celebrity case or something crazy. But it is, man, I'm so glad you brought that show up.
It's very good. Have I told you about this documentary that I watched?
No, which one?
It's My Brother the Serial Killer. I think that's the title of it.
Your brother is not a serial killer, but that's good to know. Tell us about it.
But this guy has killed like, I don't know, I think it's like 50 women or something this guy has killed. But at some point in the documentary, they start talking about the OJ case.
What?
And they think that this guy potentially could have murdered Nicole Brown in the, whatever the other
but
guy's
what
name.
Was the motive? Like, you think he was paid?
No, yeah, by OJ. He's friends with OJ. The documentary talks about, it's only a short piece of the documentary, but basically what it says is that OJ wanted him to go get some like $15,000 earrings from Nicole. And he said, I don't care what you do, even if you have to kill her. And so he went over there and killed her. And holy this guy has shit. Admitted to it, but because it's like 50 women, he was on death penalty in two different states. And so they never tried him or, you know, did anything else with his confession of killing Nicole Brown.
Wait, so he said he did it?
Yeah, he said he did. And he described the murder scene exactly the way both of them were laying down, how he did it, the whole thing.
Oh,
and
my God.
He said that OJ came over, and that's how the blood got in his car. OJ came to see the result.
He went to the murder scene?
Yeah. And so that's how they explain how the blood got in the Broncos. So it doesn't take OJ out of it. OJ's still guilty.
Yeah, right.
It's pretty interesting.
What, do you think OJ paid him to do it? Or he just like...
I just think it's possible. I think it's... That is crazy.
You just potential. Added a whole new element,
yeah,
man.
You should check it out.
Dude, I went to the murder scene. Like, I went to the murder scene when I was in high school.
Oh, wow.
Like, at night, and it was, like, super eerie. And I went last week because really? It's in Brentwood. I mean, it's like, and especially watching the show, I'm like, yeah. I got to go by there. So like they've remodeled it, obviously. But the craziest thing is they didn't take out the tile that was on the floor where all the bodies are. Like, how could you not redo that? They redid everything else
except
for the tile that all the bodies were just like laying eerie, right?
Yeah, totally.
Eerie. And the crazy thing is like the neighborhood is, I mean, it's like as suburbia can get in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And it's amazing that two people were murdered at like 9 o'clock at night. Yeah, nobody heard. People weren't like people were walking their dogs and stuff. But how could you not hear a murder? You know what I mean?
Know, yeah.
And on top of that, there was a struggle.
Right.
And there were kids in the apartment.
Right. And there's two people,
you know?
So it's not like if it was just one, you could somewhat understand. It could have been quick. No one knew, but it's two people. So yeah. Someone's got to be screaming and yelling in this time period.
I secretly think that somebody knows something, and they just. They don't want to talk about it. But I'm addicted to that show.
It's so
man.
Good.
I mean, honestly, when it gets to the end every week, I'm like, I can't believe I have to wait another week to watch the rest of this. You know what I mean? It's just, it's killing me.
Very
that
good.
Show is so good.
Totally.
High five, Josh. High five. I just put my pet monkey on
yeah,
you.
Yeah, that wasn't a high five sound.
I was at least motioning for the high five. Anyways, looks like our special guest
very nice.
Has arrived. Mr. Curtis Kieber, say hello.
What's going on, guys?
Oh, our studio audience loves you too.
Oh, see, thank you.
You walked, you walked right by them when you were coming in. You didn't even see them.
I know, they're so gracious.
I know. See, and you know they were like, is he going to notice us? Is he going to at least acknowledge us? But you did.
I'll
That's
acknowledge
good.
Him on the way out.
Yeah, good. Yeah, we'll give you a pen. So. You can sign a few autographs. Yeah.
So let's just jump right in. So where are you from originally?
I'm originally from upstate New York, Rochester, New York.
And the sticks, man.
The sticks, dude. Everyone I talked to, they're always like, where's your accent? Like, from 6 hours away from the city. Nothing at all.
There's nothing. Just snow. Just snow and just... lots of grass.
Yeah.
As a people, I'm from Massachusetts, but they always say the same about Boston. You know, like, oh, where's your Boston accent? It's like, nope, don't have it.
You're like, get in the fucking car.
Yeah, right. Just throw it out there.
You should just do it for kicks.
Yeah.
All right, so Rochester, New York.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And then when you also moved to Arizona, correct?
Yeah, yeah. I bounced around for a while. Like, I was in Phoenix.
Sorry, I just had to.
That was actually me bouncing across the room. Here we go. So, but yeah, I lived in Phoenix for about 4 years or so, and then after Phoenix, I was out in Raleigh, North Carolina, for about a year and a half. And
wow!
I finally made my way out to LA.
Wait, that's
about
like
4 years ago.
That's you're all over the map,
yeah.
Man.
No, man. Change is good.
Change is good. And like you really went to like very vastly different places.
Very.
How did you choose them?
Well, it was. It all revolved around music. You know, I was playing music full-time in Phoenix. You know, I had a band out there, and we did some, like, small touring. And then when I moved out to North Carolina, I had a pretty cool opportunity to, like, got a call with this band that toured, like, all the time. I maybe spent, like, a half dozen weekends in Raleigh that year and a half. I lived there. So it was, like,
wow.
Yeah, it was pretty cool, like, opportunities that I didn't want to pass up on. You know, and I was able to play music full time in these cities while like avoiding LA, and that little bit of me was like, I could do this without moving to LA. You know,
silly rabbits. Yeah.
but anyway, so yeah, I ended up just kind of hitting that ceiling and needed to expand my creativity even more. So I came out here.
Like, I must go to Mecca, aka Los Angeles.
Yeah. Totally.
And love it.
Josh said the same thing. He's like, you know what? Boston's cool and all, but it's time to move to the big city.
The weather. It's the weather, though.
It really is.
It's the best weather maybe in the entire world.
I think it is. Yeah, it might be. Not maybe. I think it's...
Yeah, it's crazy.
Like, I saw pictures of Utah today,
yeah.
And it's just, like, snowing and cold clouds everywhere. There's, like, hurricanes in other parts of the country and other parts of the world. And L.A., I'm like... Ooh, we got a little wind. Ooh,
it's like windy right now.
Getting
yeah.
68
yeah.
or 70.
I was on the way in here. I was like, wow, it's really windy.
So
bad as it gets.
Wow, there's weather.
Yeah.
Did you start? Now you're a bassist. You're a bass extraordinaire. Mm-hmm. So how did you get into playing music? Did you start in New York? Did you take music classes? Were you a part of music programs through high school?
I did. Yeah, I started when I was 12, and this kind of started up through like private instruction and then jazz band.
Well, what made you want to play the bass in the beginning?
You know, man, it's actually kind of a cool little story, but like at the end of the street where I grew up on, there were some friends that I always like would hang out with down there. And it was a brother and a sister who lived at the house at the end of the street. And the sister was older than us and she had a band. And I remember like when they would rehearse, the bass would shake the house. And, and that's
I
like,
want to be bass player.
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought. I was like, dude, this is so cool. I want to be able to shake a house. That'd be awesome.
You're like, I want to shake a house with her and play bass. How can I
yeah, right, that? Right.
She's like, oh really, Curtis. Yeah. So you were driven by the bass.
Yeah.
And then when did you first pick up the bass?
When I was 12. So like shortly after that, I asked my parents if we go like to a music store shopping for a bass. So
that's not easy for a 12-year-old to play too. That's a heavy instrument, and the frets are big.
Frets
like
are pretty wide.
Yeah,
you know?
So it's like, how did you, as a 12-year-old kid, I can't imagine you were like, boom, 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 but like just jumping right into
man,
it.
It still took some time. So I feel like it's still taking some time, but but I, you know, I picked up on it and loved it and never put it down. You know,
and what was like the first type of music you started with?
Man, I went through like a huge Metallica phase as a kid.
Nice.
You know, yeah. I think like every kid goes through that phase of some sort, you know.
And Justice for All, that's probably the time that you were.
Oh, dude, yeah.
Totally. Enter Sandman, that was big then too, right? Classic records.
Yeah. And then, like, after that phase, like, a buddy of mine, like, introduced me to Victor Wooten, you know, and I was like, whoa, what, you know, life changed, you know. So, yeah, man, just kind of expanded upon that and, you know, trying to see what else I can do with it.
I'm always jealous of like musicians that have like high school music programs that where they could incorporate electric guitars and basses and stuff.
Yeah.
My school had like marching band, orchestra, and like choir. That was it.
Oh, really?
It was like there was never any jazz band or anything like that. So I'm like, I'm so envious. So tell me about that real quick so you can just rub it in a little bit so I can feel sad for myself.
Right? Oh, man, we had we had a great jazz program at my high school.
And we're all out of time. No, I'm just
just going to see how I can rub it in. It just,
It's working. It's working.
But, yeah, no, it was a really awesome program. Bill Tiberio was the instructor, and like, to this day, just one of the best mentors I've ever had.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And, yeah, he just has this really subtle way of encouraging students and is, you know, it's like he motivates you without motivating. Like, he's just really calm, cool, collective, and he's just very encouraging and just one of the nicest guys in the world.
Did he ever grill you? Come on, give us the dirt.
You know, I think he did a couple times, you know, which I would hope, like, and, you know, professors out there would, you know.
Right,
yeah.
They want to push their students, you know.
Did you ever get in trouble in class, Josh, doing anything crazy?
Did I ever get in trouble?
Yes.
I got suspended and expelled from school. So. And unfortunately, at the time, I thought band was, like, you know, too nerdy. I was never going
to
take it.
Oh, studio audience, they're about to pick fights with you, man.
I was never going to do it.
They must be all band people.
Yeah, they were all in Curtis's.
No, it's unfortunate, though, because I would have loved to have been in band. I mean, now.
You're too busy getting suspended,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, there's hope for you yet. You turned out all right.
Well, we'll still see. That's still debatable, too. So.
All right. So you started playing in high school bands.
Yeah.
And then when was the moment you were like, I want to do this full time?
It was right around that time. I think I was like maybe a sophomore or junior in high school, and I just had a, I remember having a band with my really good friends, and we were really good for like 15-year-old kids, I thought, you know, and I just remember thinking to myself, like, man, if we could do this like full time, like that would be so cool. And for myself, you know, just having those cool musical moments of like when everything is gelling and everyone's on the same page with each other, you look over, you give that smile, you know, that was just like
the best feeling.
Oh, it's the best, you know. And I was like, man, if I could do this forever, like how can I do it, you know? And so I'm still trying to chase that today.
So. You're doing it, man. You're doing it. You've been playing with all kinds of people. So let's talk about that a little bit.
Cool.
You've been playing, you started playing with the kids band. What's the name of the kids band that you were playing with?
Lucky Diaz.
Lucky Diaz. That's right. That's right. Mm-hmm. Children. It's like a children's. How would you describe the music?
Well,
you,
they're.
I should let you do it. So you're looking at me like you're butchering it.
Yeah.
You're,
oh, no.
You're killing it. You are killing me right now.
Sounds just like Teletubbies or something the way you're describing it. Like,
he's like, Nikki, seriously. That's enough.
Nice. Yeah, they're. Well, first, like, my good buddy, Wes Switzer, is the. Bass player and producer for them. So whenever he's not available, he's a pretty busy guy, they'll give me a call, so I'll like fill in. And I've done a handful of dates with them, but those gigs are the coolest gigs, because it's children's music, and but it's not like the kind of children's music you would expect, you
right
know? It's like all Beach Boys, Beatles influenced music.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's good.
And it's just like an intense show, like for the kids, and then it's really cool to see the parents getting into it as well.
Aren't you in like costumes too? Don't you wear like have you worn costumes?
I haven't worn a costume.
Okay.
No, but like I just kind of wear like a suit, you know.
Okay.
You know,
I thought crazy. I've seen pictures of you like or other people that have worn, maybe it's like maybe audience members or something that
possibly
are in?
Possibly. Okay. Yeah, Alicia has like a she, because Lucky and Alicia, they're husband and wife, and they're the, you know, the front of the band, but she wears some pretty awesome outfits.
Okay,
you know,
so maybe that's what maybe I saw. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
And so these are concerts geared towards kids.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
We've gone all over the country. Like we
did
awesome. A gig on the National Mall one time, like, and it was just like all these kids all over the place, and you know they're killing it. You know, they won a Latin Grammy a couple of years
nice.
Back.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
that's
crazy.
I mean, it's really awesome. So whenever I have the chance to play with them, I'm just like,
yes,
like,
let's do
yes,
it.
Let's go.
And like playing music with kids, it's in some ways it's so much cooler than adults, because they have no like they just want to dance. They just want to like jump around and have fun, and they're like giggling. Sometimes they'll even jump on stage. It's like, oh, wait a minute, you're gonna don't pull that cable. Yeah. Don't touch that drum.
Yeah.
But for the most part, it's so fun, because you just get this youthful energy.
You know? Dude, it's a blast. It's really cool to like, especially see the kids' reactions at the beginning of the show, because they stand there and they look up at you and they're like, what's going on? You know, and then you see them like. Start to shake and wiggle like in the first second song, and they fart a couple times.
I'm sorry,
you know, and then
all that shaking and wiggling, it's bound to happen, let's be honest. Yeah.
And then just like by the end of the show, they're just like full out, just all over the place. It's really
now cool. you also have played with other artists. Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about that, because you've been on the road with some YouTube sensations. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, man. So actually it was my first tour I got on when I moved to LA was with David Choi, and he's a YouTube artist who just has millions and millions and millions of views on his page, and I think he's got just over a million subscribers as well.
It's crazy. Yeah, that is crazy.
Yeah, and I've also played with toured with Tyler Ward, who's another YouTube artist, Alex G, and these guys just have like such a niche following. And it's just really cool to see that they're able to do this on YouTube. And then, you know, every city we go to, there's a crowd.
Oh, yeah.
That's awesome.
YouTube's such a beast. I mean, they have these YouTube get-togethers where
I've heard about them.
Not even, this, you know, musicians. It's just people that make funny jokes and stuff. And
really?
They'll have teenagers lined up for miles to see these people. Just
That's
get their
awesome.
Autograph just to say hi. Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, it's they have, like, the social networking game down pat.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's amazing. And they never stop working.
No.
It's actually like inspiring to be around that, because it makes you want to work harder.
Yeah, and I'm sure it's addictive for them. It has to be addictive The fact that you make these little videos, you get millions of views, you always want to get that number higher.
Yeah.
All these people want to see
you. And
you
know, people are watching, you know what I mean?
Oh, like, yeah.
That's exciting. Like,
totally.
So it's like you want to churn out more stuff because people are paying
attention. And they're making good money to make these videos at this point. If they have millions of subscribers, they're making good money.
Yeah. Totally.
Have they done any of these YouTube artists, have they done any of like the YouTube, like you go to YouTube and you do like... interviews or anything like that? Have you done anything like that?
I remember doing a couple video shoots at the YouTube space with them. I think we did one with Tyler a couple of years back, and they just have everything set up for him, and I mean everyone knows him by first name over there
because
he's such a he's one of the biggest YouTube artists, I feel, in the music world, you know. So
that studio is awesome too, isn't it?
It's beautiful.
Yeah,
man.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's all dialed in.
Yeah.
It's cool. You know, they have like the second floor has like a fireman's pole to come down to the first
floor.
Awesome. Yeah. It's really cool.
Yeah. The lobby, like I've also done like a concert there where they turn the whole lobby into a stage.
Oh, nice.
You know, so they just kind of push everything aside and it's, I mean, they do it right. You know, it's pretty cool.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And that space is free to them. If you have a certain amount of viewers, you can rent out that space if you're a YouTuber for free. YouTube pays for that.
That's
space for
awesome.
Yeah,
let's start a YouTube channel.
Seriously.
Guys.
Let's do it. Let's take over the world.
YouTube's amazing.
I mean, let's make a YouTube channel. Sorry. So, Curtis, I've actually worked with Curtis personally. You played on one of my tracks on Solo Sessions, a track called Silent Tears. And you've also done some work with that for artists I produced. Mm-hmm. Curtis, you actually are one of the most joyous musicians. This is why I love working with this guy. You just always come ready to play, to like throw down musically, and then you have a good time doing it, you know? How do you stay so motivated throughout tours and recording sessions? This is a personal question. I just want to ask you.
It's just, it just excites me. Like every situation I get into, I just get so excited about, you know, and
you're like a kid. You're like a kid. Oh, I see it every time.
Totally, man. Like I just can't stop smiling every time I'm playing. Like it's just so much fun. And for me, you know, cause I'm not really like a songwriter or, I haven't really tapped into that side of my brain before. So like the way I get to really express my creativity is by playing with artists like you and other artists. And, you know, if I can embellish on some parts or whatever I'm feeling as far as, like, the bass line goes, and they dig it, then that's what gets me excited, you know, because it's just, I don't know, like, everyone around seems to be enjoying it.
Bass is the most important instrument in a band. It is.
Yeah,
Is. It is. No matter what anybody says, I'm like, the drummer and the bassist are the most important, and between the two, it's like... Bass is the only instrument that's pulse and melody. Mm-hmm. You know, like drums will never have that. They'll always be pulse, you know?
Yeah, it's definitely the link between rhythm and harmony for sure.
You know? Well, let's play something that that you recorded. What do you plan us?
I'm not
drum roll, please. We don't know yet. What do you want? You of the three that you sent, what do you want to play first?
Let's do is that Two Worlds track up there? That was a really fun one I did recently.
I don't see that. I see Slow Dancing.
Oh, yeah, that one. That one's really fun, man. Let's do that. That's the Two Worlds song, yeah. It was a really fun session I did recently.
All right, here we go.
Supernatural, powerful, incredible. Vision's blurry, but this feeling's pretty legible. Attracting me magnetically, it's magical. Yeah, you got me headstrong, being tactical. Planting seeds in my heart, knowing they will grow. Now you're running through my head, oh, it's my control. So come with me and we'll go
to places you've never known.
There'll be no stopping me and you.
Slow dancing on the moon. Days have been on my mind. I have too many numbers left to multiply. Need a spare few, so out of room to count you in. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, losing track again. You never believe it, you never retreat, but baby, I'm thinking it's true. If things keep going like this, I'll fall in love with you. Yeah, I got room for two. Y'all that I need, so girl, let me be your party.
Stop.
Slow dancing on the moon. If you want it, leave the love to prove. You know.
supernatural, powerful. Supernatural, powerful, incredible, incredible. We are supernatural, powerful. Supernatural, powerful. Supernatural, powerful, incredible, incredible.
One more time, who's that artist?
That was an artist called Two Worlds. They're out of Denver. So a producer friend of mine, Joey Barba, produced that track, and he's based here. So
he's like, Curtis, I need you. Bring in the low end, man. Bring in the low end. Dude, super funky bass line, by the way.
Thanks, man.
Yeah. Super groovy.
Fun song.
It's just like, I was like, doing a little groove. I was like, oh, shit.
Yeah, when he played me that track, he's just like, dude, just have fun with it. Yeah. I was like, all right, cool.
Well, you put like the right space in it, like groovy bass line, man. Thanks, it's just, man. It was banging.
Thank you.
It's good.
Appreciate it.
High five, man. High five. High five that. We'll do it like that and like that. Yeah.
That's better than the monkey high five.
Yeah.
Hey, the monkey high five had its moment, all right? Don't shit on the monkey, please. All right, so I was going to ask you something else. How often are you working with producers versus artists in the studio versus being on the road?
The live stuff is definitely keeping me busy the most, you know.
You've been touring like crazy recently, right?
I've been on the road quite a bit, yeah. I mean, 2015 and beginning of this year has been more like spot dates more than anything. But, I mean, still plenty of time out on the road, which is great. I love getting out and traveling. And
that's like the best part of being a musician.
It really is cool, man. I don't take any moment. Like,
hey, you just get to see so much of the country and travel around. It's awesome. A lot of people don't get to do it. So
yeah, it's. I feel very fortunate, man. I definitely don't take any moment like that for granted. You know,
I definitely get a little envious of bass players because they usually have the least amount of gear. Like, like they don't have much gear, and they're usually not like the band leaders, and they can just kind of like coast. Like, hey, what time's the hit? Okay, I'll be there. It's like me being the band leader. I'm like, I feel like I'm playing babysitter all the time. Like, make sure you guys are here at this time. Wake up call. Like, it's like when I get home, that's when I can sleep. But yeah, bass players just like, they're like the coolest guys in the band. They're just like, yeah, man, I'll be there. All right. Yeah, where do you want me to plug in? It's like, damn it.
Have you heard of this band, the Royal Blood?
You know, I haven't.
Oh, you should check them out. So there's no guitarist. It's just a bassist and a drummer. It's just two guys.
Oh, for real?
And there's so much noise that come out of these two guys. It's unbelievable. That's so cool. Yeah, and so he has a lot of pedals and effects on his bass.
That's sweet.
It sounds like a guitar at times, but it's pretty awesome. You should check them out.
Royal Bloods. Where are they from?
Don't know.
I put you on the spot.
not from the States.
I was going to say, they sound like they're like from England.
Yeah.
It probably makes sense.
Yeah, it's cool. They're really good. Just two guys. Royal Bloods.
Yeah, I'm going to check that
out. Yeah, you'll be amazed the noise that comes out of these two guys.
That's sweet.
Easy there, buddy.
They're
easy.
Good. They're really good.
There's some noise coming out of these three guys, if you know what I mean. Anyways, Curtis, you also have a very customized bass I want to talk about.
Yeah.
It's one of the coolest looking instruments that I've ever seen.
He told me before the show. I told you. I hope he brings it.
I was like, I hope he brings it. But then I told him on the email, I'm like, you don't have to play if you don't want to. So he's like, all right, I won't. I was like, that's cool, man. Yeah, I'm cool. Don't worry about it.
Tell us
about this bass. Tell us why you got it made and how you got it made and what makes it so unique. But just, it's such a cool looking instrument. I want you just to kind of talk about that for a little bit.
Oh, man. Back in 2007, I have a good buddy back home. His name's Bo Leopard, and his company's BL Design, and he makes custom bass guitars. And I remember there was like, I had money saved up, and I was going to get a motorcycle. And then I met him, and he's like, hey, I'm Bo. I make bass guitars. And I was like, let's talk.
So no motorcycle.
Yeah, exactly. Unfortunately.
But, he's like, damn it.
Yeah, but yeah, it's really wild, man. It's a single cutaway. And then the top is spalted myrtle burl. For any like the wood junkies out there, it's basically wood that got a disease, and when wood gets a disease, it just turns into this like beautiful piece of art. And when you cut it in half and fold it open, it's bookmatched, and it just, when you see what's inside and what happens, it's like the wood gets cancer essentially. So it like changes color, like it turns gray, and then the little burls start to
happen. How does it get diseased like that?
It's just like hundreds and hundreds of years of, I don't know, something just happens.
Wow.
But it's really awesome when you look at like exotic woods and how they put them on bases, you know? So yeah, we went like full out, you know, we had the exotic, spalted myrtle burl, that top on the base, and he cut out the pickup covers like right out of the top. So when you look at it, the base is continuous. There's no black pickup covers on it or anything. And then the back is done the same way too. And then for the control cavity cover, it's magnetic, so you just pull it up with your finger, no screws, no nothing.
That's wild. And
same thing for the truss rod cover up top. Like it's
Josh
really
is confused. He's like,
yeah, I don't know much. I don't know much.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so that type of wood, does that actually change the sound, or is it just aesthetics?
I mean, I don't know.
Good
exactly.
question, Josh.
I don't know if that particular wood would do the aesthetic or. I'm sure it's there for aesthetics because the body is swamp ash, and the body.
We don't have a sound for that.
Just nerding out. Must be. Come on, someone.
Must be a swamp ass one somewhere.
Oh, I was too busy laughing. Did you say swamp ash? Who thought of that
I guess
one?
That is kind of, yeah.
You have to really stress that H. When you have that, you're like, it's made of swamp ash.
Yeah. Just say H, you ash with an H.
Or nobody wants to touch that base.
Yeah, like, pretty much. Cool. Pretty much, man.
Sorry. Oh, man. I'm such a little kid. It's ridiculous.
Hey, man.
All right, so back to swamp ash.
Yeah. Nice. That's... I can't
think. Sorry, it really should have been. It really should have been
there
that. That was my bad. That was my bad. I'm sorry. How long did it take to get built?
It took like I want to say a year and a half or so to make. Because it was right around the time where he was like starting the company. So you know, he was still in that trial and error process himself.
Right.
So it took some time. But now you know his company's grown and he can crank these out like in a couple of months now.
And Josh, you've seen, you know, me play with several different basses. Mm-hmm. I've never seen a bass like this instrument. It's just so exotic.
Sounds awesome.
And that's, I know, when you like, whenever you're playing a gig, people ask you, they have to, because it just doesn't look like anything that anybody's
ever
seen.
They do, you know, man. And it's funny, like, I don't,
those 5-year-old kids just run up and say, what kind of bass is that?
What kind of pickups are in there?
Yeah, right.
He's like, swamp ash.
Swamp ash.
Yeah, dude. I mean, I wish I got to play it more, you know, because when I moved out to L.A., actually got like a funny story about it, but like every like producer, whenever I went to auditions or artists, you know, they were just, they loved just a P bass
or
just a jazz bass, you know. And I remember having a moment in a session. I got to tell this story real quick.
Yeah, yeah, please, please.
Funny. I remember getting, it was one of my first sessions. It was through Jay, actually.
Okay.
And, and
big shout out to Jason Johnson.
Jason.
He's the one that introduced us to each other.
Yeah. But yeah, I went into the session and, or he sent me an email, the producer, you know, he's pretty notable. And he's like, hey man, so I have a P bass here. You can use that if you'd like. And I was like, cool, I can bring my jazz bass. He's like, okay, cool. Sounds good. So when I get to the session, he's like, cool, let's do like 4 or 5 passes on your jazz bass, and then let's do 4 or 5 passes on my P bass. I was like, cool. So we, you know, do the 4 or 5 passes. It went great. And then after the first take on the P bass, he just like leans over, you know, his head turns around his shoulder, and he's just like, you know what, man? I think that's the sound we're looking for. And I was like, I'm going to get a P bass.
I just bought a P bass, man.
Nice.
Dude, it is like, that is... it's like the essential bass.
Yeah.
But as far as bass players, I can see how they're like, okay, I have that, but I want to get other vocabulary as far as like sounds and different.
People just love that classic sound. You know?
There's something about a P bass that you cannot replicate, and you cannot move around. Yeah. Like it's like the meat and potatoes of bass playing.
Oh, it's so good too, it's man. So good. And when you play it and you see how it like sits in the mix and everything, it's just like yes,
it's just it's properly made, yeah. But. I love the way that bass sounds.
And whenever there's a chance, I play it as much as possible.
It's such a bitchin' instrument. It really is. Thanks, dude. Anyways, let's get back to another tune. What are you going to play us next?
Let's
While he thinks. Drum roll.
Silence. You got Runaway Cowgirl on there,
We
chance?
Do.
Oh, yes, cool. We do.
All right, here we go.
Sweet.
She said she'd never fall in love, 'cause maybe it hurt too much. Daddy never stuck around, Mama never had enough. Ginger's just a working girl, waiting
Down.
got some country fans.
So this wasn't you singing.
No, definitely not.
So who's the track from?
So that's from a band called Calico.
Calico.
Yes, and those ladies have felt like just become part of my family out here in LA. I've been playing with them for a couple of years now, and whenever I get the call to play with them, I'm just another artist. I'm like, yes, let's do
that's it. That's awesome. That's the other thing too. You're playing with good artists, you know. And you were playing upright on that.
On that track, I was. Yeah.
So that we were talking about this, you know, off when we were listening to the song, but we were also chatting. But to me, the sign of a good bass player, the difference between a good bass player and a great bass player is when they can play upright. And you are playing upright. So, man, you're like one of the cats, man. How did you get into playing upright?
Well, I did like a little bit in jazz band in high school, but I never really had like, you know, formal training back then on it. You know, I just, you know, again, Mr. Tiberio there, he's the one who kind of just like encouraged it, you know. Didn't play it a whole lot, but and like after that, in the time I lived in Arizona and North Carolina, I didn't play it at all.
That's crazy, because that's like where it lives. All the bluegrass stuff and country stuff.
I know. It's shame on me.
Yeah, shame on you, Curtis. Get out. Just leave.
So, but yeah, when I moved out here, you know, it was like we had that conversation, and you know, just if you want to be able to, you know, get some work and play and whatnot, upright is one of those instruments that, you know, will keep you busy. And plus, and I've been playing it for, man, I feel like probably 40% of my gigs now are on upright.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And
especially in LA. That's amazing.
It's really awesome.
Do you travel with this thing? How do you travel with an upright?
You know, man,
good question, Josh.
I haven't traveled with it at all.
Okay.
Like, if you want to do some, like, spot dates and whatnot, they usually just, like, rent one, you know, like, in a different city.
Yep.
Bring one in. But even that sometimes is, who knows how those things are going to be set up.
Right.
You know, so, but yeah, man, I love it. You know, it's so much fun to play, and upright's like one of those instruments that like you just really have to
know the instrument to play it, because first of all, there are no frets. Second of all, there are no dots to give you like, oh, this is where this note is. So you really have to know the instrument, you know, and know how to play that instrument. And you have to love bass, because that thing is a huge motherfucker.
I don't want to insult you, but what's the difference between a cello and an upright bass?
Cello.
Well, the bass is much larger.
Okay.
Of course, you know, it's much larger.
And you usually play cello with a
bow. I mean,
can do both.
You can definitely do both.
Damn, almost. I shoot every show.
Yeah. But cello usually sits in like a different voice. You know, a voicing of the song. You know, the bass will carry the mix from the bottom, and cello kind of just brings the pretty colors and you know.
Cello's smaller too. You usually sit when you play the cello.
Okay.
Upright. You sit. You can sit, but you're sitting much higher.
Yeah.
So, and it's almost like it's taller than every person. Yeah. I've never seen a person that's taller than an upright bass.
No. Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely a huge instrument.
Yeah.
And that probably wasn't the best explanation describing the difference between the two instruments. So I apologize to all my friends out there.
That's all right. Everybody's like so confused. Like, he didn't answer the question. No, yeah. I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. So, do you have a preference between playing upright or electric?
I mean, my heart's playing electric. That just feels home.
There's always power in that.
Yeah.
I battle between acoustic and electric all the time. Like, I'm like, oh my God, I love acoustic. Then I play electric. I'm like, oh my God, I love electric. And then I go back to acoustic. I'm like, oh my God, acoustic though.
Yeah, but they're, you know? I feel like they're different.
They're totally
different. It's like saying, you know, would you rather a tractor or a sports car? Which the easy answer is sports car, but it depends what you're doing. If you're digging a hole, a tractor might be better. So
that's a good point.
You're absolutely right. Because there's so many times, you know, where I've gone into sessions and I've brought the upright and like a P bass, and you know, just wanted to like see what the difference is, you know, and whatever that track calls for. And whenever it's upright, like it's upright,
right?
You know, like you just can't place that.
It's
sound.
Got a sound. It's got a sound.
Yeah.
But I always, like, every time I see, like, especially when I'm in New York, whenever I see an upright bass player traveling around in New York, I'm like, dude, how do you do this?
It's got the
wheel. Yeah, it's got the wheel, but still, like, subway, you're like, still going up and down the stairs in the subway.
Yeah,
you're
the
still,
subway.
Like, crammed into, like, a tiny space with that thing, and they're just,
gotta, like, lean it to get
Yeah, yeah, like upright bass players, like I have so much respect for them, especially in New York, especially the jazz guys.
Totally.
That it's just like, oh my god, how do you lug this thing around?
And those guys are the best, dude.
In
those,
the snow. Yeah.
They're the best, man. Those are like, that's where you like when you see an amazing upright player, you just can't help but like,
right,
jaw to the floor. Like, how do you do that? You know.
I saw Ron Carter in New York, and it was just like,
dude,
this guy's a badass. I mean, it's just. There's so many players. Let's talk about that real quick. Yeah. Who are some of your biggest inspirations? You mentioned Victor Wooten. Who else?
I'd say like my top three I always say is Marcus Miller. I'm a big Marcus Miller
fan.
He's
a badass.
Always been. Pino Palladino, of course.
He's a badass,
he's,
too.
He's the best. And then Nathan East.
He's awesome.
He's amazing. He's just one of those guys that he's just on every single recording and he's so diverse with his playing.
He was Eric Clapton's bassist for years and years and years and years. So if you see him, you'd be like, oh, yeah, he's the shit. But he actually does a lot of smooth jazz recordings.
Yeah.
Did you know that?
Oh, yeah, totally.
I didn't know that until recently.
Yeah,
I was like,
yeah,
man, he's on this record? He's on this record? He's producing a lot
he does
of records
everything.
Like that?
I remember I was talking with a buddy recently, and the song Deja Vu by Beyonce, I heard that was Nathan East on it, too.
Dude.
I was like, how does he do it? Everything.
Well, we're going to play one more track. What's the cool. last track you're going to play us?
I think Bones by Alex G, another YouTube artist.
Here it comes. Yeah. Bones.
Fire.
Curtis Kieber. So real quick, how can people find you?
Well, I'm all over the social media stuff. If you're on Instagram or I really don't use Twitter that much, but
it's okay. Yeah. Nobody does. <I'm> yeah,
just kidding. it's just at Curtis Kieber, KURTISKEBER.
I was going to tell you to spell it out because people are dumb, but you beat me to it.
It's always, yeah, it's with a K, man.
With a K. All K's. One more time. What's your website again?
It is CurtisKieber.com.
KURTISKEBER.
That's it.
On behalf of Josh Ledoux, I'm Nicky Carulla. We'll see you next week.
Yeah.
Woo!
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nicky Carulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.